Well, the book is about is how a snail kind of got me through a very difficult year, and I had a very sudden viral illness that has resulted in a post-viral chronic situation, and I have years periodically that are particularly extreme in which I'm bedridden. And a friend brought me a pot of violets that she had dug up outside, and on a walk she had found a snail, and she happened to put the snail into the violet pot, and I began to watch the snail.
Now, to the uninitiated, you know, watching a snail, people will say, and then after 45 seconds, what'd you do then? But what you write about in such great detail is that it was an amazing creature to watch.
It was. I initially was kind of annoyed because I didn't know what to do with it, and I couldn't get out of bed, and my friend drove home, and there I was with his snail, and I kind of forgot about it, and then a few hours later, I noticed it had come out of its shell, and I just watched it because when you're lying in bed and you're too sick to read or watch TV and something's moving, you tend to just watch it. And it took a few days and I thought the next day it might just have wandered off and disappeared. I'd never see it. But the next day it had gone back to sleep in the violet pot for the day because they're nocturnal. And then in that second evening, it came out of its shell and went exploring again. And as the days passed, it had this pattern to its life of where it slept and where it would go to explore, and I became quite curious and fascinated by it. And as time went on, it really became sort of a companion that was there day and night. And I got very intrigued. It, you know, had habits just like I did, and you know, woke up and went to bed like I did, and liked good food, and had little small snail-sized adventures.
and had its living space with it all the time.
That's right. One of the cool things about being a snail is you've got your camping equipment on your back, so you really can take off and go anywhere. But what was so intriguing was that in this particular case, in the beginning of the book anyway, it kept returning to the flower pot to sleep at night because that was the most natural habitat. If it had been out in the wild, it would have slept quite possibly in different places at different points during the day. But because it was in a very foreign terrain and there wasn't much that was natural, it kept going back to the flower pot, which is called homing when it goes back to the same place to sleep.
When one of my favorite little passages in the book, The Sound of a Wild Snail Eating, is when you start to consider the snail's shell and its shape, and then you remember that you had been at the Guggenheim, which, you know, kind of has a similar feel to it, and so you imagined the Guggenheim as your home with your head sticking out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I love that image.
I'm good. Yes, what happened, the year that the snail lived at my side, you know, most of my connection to it was companionship, kind of an emotional bond. I could feed it, and there was very little else I could do to help anybody else in the world. Mm-hmm. I could help this small creature. And it wasn't until I was writing the book that I learned so much about snails and how fascinating they are. And as I read the malacology literature, which is the science of mollusks and gastropods, the snail is a gastropod, reading about them in incredible detail and that information was so fascinating, and it got me thinking a lot about the differences and similarities between a snail and a human, and I had a lot of fun with that as a writer, as I worked on the book, just doing those comparisons. And you know, it's pretty amazing, this tiny little creature. Well, it has a lung just like we do because it's a land-dwelling animal, so in that way there's a similarity. On the other hand, their noses are really tentacles that have smell sensory cells on the tentacles, and they can move those around, whereas our nose is very firmly attached and can't wiggle very much at all. So these similarities and differences, as I was working on the book, just fascinated me and were really fun to explore.
Yeah, I mean, this book is memoir of the year and of your relationship with the snail and what you kind of learned about yourself. But then there is also much information, much fascinating information about snails. Did you always know when you started to write the sound of a wild snail eating that it would have that sort of dichotomy, that balance?
I had no idea. I had my observations when I began the project, but I didn't know how I'd expand it into a book. I did know that I didn't really, as a writer, I've never wanted to write about myself, and I never wanted to write about illness at all. But I was just very fond of the snail, the fact that it got me through a year, and so the book was sort of a biographical thank you to the snail. And it was only as I started trying to figure out how to create a book and started, you know, I went to the malacology literature, the snail literature to read about them and just kind of fell in love with that. And it pulled me right into it. And that's kind of how the book expanded. And that allowed me to bring a little bit of the illness in here and there as well. But it really is, you know, 80% about the snail.
Some things that I guess I really didn't know about snails, but when you think about it, I'm not that surprised. Snails are pretty strong creatures.
Incredibly strong. They can pull many, many, many times their own weight. I think this is what I learned many things writing the book. One of them was that if you just take any creature and you really learn about everything about it, you know, does it have teeth? What kind of teeth? How strong is it? What can it do that a human can't do? You find yourself in awe. So this creature that's tiny and slow and you would think would be dull actually is very amazing. It's got the strength of Hercules. Snails have very romantic lives and fascinating courtship. They have methods for getting through rough times that as humans I think we can envy. They can go dormant, either hibernating in the winter or in the summer. They can estivate, another form of dormancy. So, and then, of course, they have the shell and can go on a camping trip at any moment with nothing but what's on their back. So I think it's kind of neat to learn enough about another species that you sort of find yourself in awe, even if it's small and slow. It still has an amazing life.
Yeah, and I suppose it's easier, and maybe it's because we're mammals, but it's much easier to be in fascination with, a grizzly bear or a blue whale or a dolphin. Mm. But when you really stop and consider a snail that is very tiny and, you know, I guess seemingly insignificant to many people, when you stop and you consider all these things that go on in its life, it can really make you think about what's going on in yours. Or is that trite?
I think that's very true. I think we're a very, humans are a very human-centric society. And if we do look outside of our own species, we tend to look at the mammals, you know, the larger family animal group that we belong to. And so this was, what was so fascinating was here I am looking at a creature that isn't a mammal. It's in the mollusk family. And, you know, who would think that a mollusk could be a companion? and in fact, one of the malacologists who consulted with me, Tim Pierce at the Carnegie Natural History Museum, was initially so interested in my observations that he got quite interested in setting up experiments for people with chronic illnesses who happened to be bedridden to monitor snail experiments.
When did you know that you were done with the book?
That's a very good question, because actually I think I do have an Aristotle quote in the book. My memory is not the best part of me. I write very visually and with sound. But that's a very, very interesting question. I think I knew I was done when I was totally saturated, because I kept finding more information. For instance, I had turned in my manuscript and I came across some Charles Darwin letters that I didn't know about and had to rewrite a chapter. And I kept finding more additional pieces I wanted to sneak into the pages, but there was a point at which one more snail piece of information, and I just knew I couldn't deal with it. So I would say it was saturation, but it was a four-year project.
Right.
So I think it just, you know, the structure was very challenging organizationally as a writer to come up with a structure for this book. There's so many interesting aspects of an animal, and you have to kind of find a way to weave them together in a way that makes sense, and that was a real challenge.
But you did it beautifully.
Thank you.
Were there any conversations, I'm not too keen on how publishing works, but when anyone said, really? This book is going to have the word snail in the title, it's going to have snail on the cover, and in this ever more competitive world of getting people's attention, did anyone ever kind of raise an eyebrow about this?
Well, I can say that whenever I told people what I was, you know, I would tell, if you tell somebody you're a writer, they immediately want to know what you write, and I would say I'm writing about an animal, and they would say, well, what animal? Immediately pretty interested, because people generally like other animals, and I would say, well, it's a snail, and they would look completely surprised and say, oh, you mean snails, plural, and I would say, no, it's a book actually about one particular snail, and they would look completely astonished and not know what to say next. They were fascinated but sort of speechless, and the funny thing is that after somebody reads the book, they will then say, I can't believe I read a whole book about a snail, and they're equally surprised even afterward. I think that, yes, it was a very unusual project to turn into a book, and even I did not know it would become as large a book as it's a very small book, but even so, I didn't think it would have the length that it does have. But it seems to be somehow quite universal in terms of the readership it's gathering, I think, because all of us want some connection to the natural world, and we're all curious about other animals. And interspecies relationships particularly fascinate us. I think within our own species, you can only learn so much about the world, and an interspecies relationship pulls you into a whole different world. It shows you a window into another way to live on Earth, and that's what really fascinated me and kept me working on the book.
The name of the book is The Sound of a Wild Snail Eating. Elizabeth Tova Bailey, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.